I'd like to welcome Wendy Johnson. She is Medical Director of La Familia Medical Center here in Santa Fe. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
It's great to have you here, and I'm looking forward to an ongoing conversation about medicine in Santa Fe, in New Mexico, in the United States. You've started writing a column for the Santa Fe New Mexican on medicine.
That's right, a monthly column just about health policy and the issues that we particularly face here in Santa Fe.
One of those issues is simply inequality. What is the effect of inequality on medical care?
Right. I'll talk about the effect of inequality more on health in general, because, but it does have effect on medical care as well. I mean, it's been really well covered over the, I would say, the past 6 or 8 months that we have a problem with growing inequality in the United States. We're one of the most unequal countries in the world, certainly in the developed world of the kind of rich nations. We're one of the most unequal countries because of a lot of our policies around income, around taxation. You know, right now there's a big debate about living wage and minimum wage in many places in the country. And so we have had historically policies which favor the rich, especially for the last, I would say, 10 or 20 years. Policies have increasingly favored the rich, and that's led directly to the situation where you know, the 99% and the 1%, that the 1% have an inordinate amount of wealth in our society. And there's been a lot of studies on the health effects of inequality. How are great societies that have more inequality different in terms of health outcomes than societies that have more equality? And what we found from those studies is that societies with more inequality have lower life expectancies, have higher infant and maternal mortality rates, have higher rates of violence, of crime, and in general, a lot of stress-related diseases, too. So there's a lot of theories about why that is. Some of it is about just the distribution of resources and wealth. If the wealthy small percentage, 1, 2, 5%, are sort of hoarding all the resources for themselves, whether that means medical care or access to good food or access to, you know, decent transportation, all of that kind of thing, then it's going to be just harder for people who are on the lower end of the spectrum to survive, to get by, to be healthy. Another argument is that inequality actually causes more stress in a society, and that stress really affects everybody. It affects the rich and affects the poor. The rich can wall themselves off in gated communities, but they have to come out sometime and participate in the society at large. And so, you know, our crumbling infrastructure, the public systems that that don't work very well because we don't invest in them, because the rich decide that they just want to opt out, our healthcare system, our education system, things like that. They don't really serve everybody equally. The rich can pay for private education, you know, the best healthcare, but the rest of us can't access that. And that causes a stress overall in society that leads to these higher crime rates, higher domestic violence rates. And we see that a lot in Santa Fe, especially.
Let's talk about violence. That is, I mean, ultimately a health outcome.
Sure.
People who are abused end up in the hospital,
right,
or not being able to work, or with injuries, or with chronic mental illness.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And that's the idea. There are countries where the average income is much, much lower than the United States. But by many, many measures, people are actually healthier than they are in the United States. The comparison is often made to Cuba, but we can look at Eastern European countries. Slovenia is one that's close to the United States in terms of some of the health outcomes. And Slovenia is a much poorer country than the United States. But the difference between Slovenia or Cuba and the United States is that everybody is sort of more or less equally in the same boat. And when you have that situation, you have a greater sense of community, you have a greater sense of we're all in this together, a greater sense of people helping each other out. And you have more shared resources and shared, you know, the public systems work for everybody more or less equally. In a country like ours, where there's so many divisions, and I would say economic divisions, but also racial divisions and ethnic divisions, in a country like ours, there's a lot of distrust. There's a lot of comparing yourselves to others. There's a lot of privilege that some people have and other people don't have. And that creates envy, that it creates stress. It creates distrust, all of that. And that leads to a lot of times what we're seeing with higher crime rates, higher violence rates.
I think it's also really important to point out that it's become the new normal. People on some level accept that that's the way it is and don't feel empowered to change it or don't really have a basis for comparison because we don't see Switzerland or Germany or even Slovenia.
Yeah.
We don't see how their systems work.
I think that's true. I think, in the United States, we have a huge sense of exceptionalism, that we're the best country in the world, that we have the best healthcare system in the world. And even when there's really strong evidence that shows our healthcare system is actually the 37th best in the world, it's not even close to the best system in the world, you know, people just kind of ignore it. And I think that we have this very strong, even cultural history in the United States, this myth, if you will, of individualism. You know, we're the rugged pioneer country and people have to make it on their own. And so we're not, we don't have this tradition more of communalism as they do in Europe. We take it for granted that, yeah, if you're rich, it's okay. You should be able to pay for special privileges for you and your family. And that we take it for granted that that's okay. A lot of people do. And in Europe, it's quite different. You know, the rates, the differences, for example, between what a CEO can make and what a worker can make in many European countries is regulated. And Europeans see that as a completely okay thing. I think in the United States, even among middle class and poor people, we kind of balk at those kind of regulations and rules.
And the reality is that in Europe, those numbers are something like 10 to 1, 12 to 1, the CEO pay to the worker pay in the same company. And in the United States, they're like 450 or 425
right.
to 1.
Yeah, I was just reading something about that. I think they're somewhere between 300 and 400 to times what the average worker makes is what a CEO makes.
And so the sense of people living in separate worlds and not understanding each other's worlds and not feeling like we're really part of one thing.
Yeah. And also, I think what's really changed over the last 20 years is, you know, we can sit here and talk about whether or not the American dream was ever really something that was accessible to everybody. But I don't think we can argue that in the last 20 years, it's become more difficult for people in lower and middle income. I've seen studies recently that says, you know, the chance if you are born in a poor neighborhood and that you will be able to make it into the middle classes or upper classes is getting smaller and smaller every year. Why? Because access to those things that people had more liberally in the past 20 years is restricted. So access to the educational systems that you need to really get ahead is restricted for a lot of those folks.
And I mean, if we want to, just as an aside, if we want to argue whether it was ever accessible to everybody, I just would like to say the words Jim Crow.
Right. Yeah. No, definitely. We could talk about that. But however bad or good it was 20 years ago, I think the evidence is pretty compelling that it's gotten a lot worse in the last 20 years in terms of really being able to access both education and healthcare. You know, having a health problem in your life, I mean, it's the biggest cause of bankruptcy in the country still is health problems that you can't afford and you have to pay for. And, you know, I think the Affordable Care Act will help some of that, but it's still very, very expensive for a lot of people, the Affordable Care Act.
It's very, very expensive.
Yeah.
Even if your premium is paid for and subsidized to some extent, your maximum out-of-pocket is $6,000 per year.
Yeah.
Show me anybody who is middle or working class who's got an extra $6,000 to throw around.
Right. I mean, I think it's a great thing for, well, you know, I'm so grateful that New Mexico expanded Medicaid. It's a great thing for the poor. The Medicaid expansion is incredible. What's sad is that we couldn't essentially have a Medicaid expansion for everybody. This was debated during the Affordable Care Act, and it was basically taken off the table. The insurance companies were really vociferously against it because they didn't want you able to buy into Medicaid. They wanted to funnel you into the insurance market, and they basically got their way. You know, it would have been nice if the Democrats would have stood up more for that. And the Republicans and some Democrats were definitely sort of pushing the insurance company agenda there.
Which is because of the power of money and lobbyists, which is a song that we sing talking about almost any issue, whether we're talking about the environment or whether we're talking about health care, whether we're talking about education, it all boils down to the same thing as the influence of money and lobbyists.
Well, and then it circles back to inequality again, because once you have so much wealth and power concentrated in a small amount of hands, as we do in the United States, it's pretty easy for those really, really wealthy people to kind of buy their influence. And I think that's what we're seeing here. And so it's pretty difficult. And they don't not only buy the influence, but they buy, you know, the media that informs us and shapes the debate. And they're really able to control the debate and to control largely the political system. So how we get out of this, I'm not sure, but it will take a real concerted effort on the part of the population to educate themselves and to really buck the trend of what the mainstream media and, you know, our politicians often are telling us.
Which is why we're here doing independent media.
Yeah.
In Santa Fe on KSFR. Now, you are medical director of La Familia Medical Center. We're talking to Dr. Wendy Johnson. What are you seeing? I mean, you are seeing low-income patients on a daily basis at La Familia.
Yeah, I think one thing that we're seeing in the recent past is it's gotten easier for poor people to get health insurance, which is great. But it's gotten a lot harder for undocumented immigrants to access health care, even just in the last year or so. And so at La Familia, you know, about 30% of our patient population is made up of undocumented immigrants. So that population is not going to have health insurance under the Affordable Care Act. I've talked to folks, you know, in our elected representatives' offices about the possibility of the immigrant reform, first of all, ever moving, and secondly, including anything about healthcare. And I've been assured that no way will it include anything about healthcare, because that's considered a kind of political third rail and nobody wants to touch that issue. So we have this large population that's contributing to our economy, that's working really hard menial jobs that often lead to health problems. And they have,
like, falls and injuries.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, often off the record, so they can't get workers' comp or anything like that. And really susceptible to all kinds of health problems. And, you know, they can't have access to health care. They can't have access to La Familia. We have a sliding scale. We have just a $20 copay. So anyone can come into La Familia if you have insurance or not. Get seen by a doctor, get labs, you know, get medicines, that kind of thing. But if we need to send them to a specialist, or if they need to be hospitalized, or if they need an operation or imaging studies or anything else, that's all extremely expensive. And that's really difficult to access now for the undocumented population.
Why has it gotten harder in the last year, the last several years?
Well, there were a few programs in Santa Fe that undocumented immigrants could access. There was a program called Project Access, where Christa St. Vincent's allowed about 4 months of access to all kinds of specialists and imaging and that kind of care for people for, like, a specific medical problem to be addressed. When the Affordable Care Act came in, I think hospitals, well, some things about the funding formula also changed for hospitals. So they were actually worried about two things, I think. Worried about their bottom line a little bit more. And also, the rationale for Project Access is covering people that don't have insurance. Well, technically, under Obamacare, everybody has insurance, right? So we don't need that program anymore. So they eliminated it. So now it's become even a little bit harder to get care for undocumented folks here.
Another problem that is a manifestation, I think, of inequality is related to food. It is more expensive to buy healthy, nutritious, organic food, the subsidized kind of, to put it succinctly, junk food industry, wheat, corn, soy, sugar. Those things are a very cheap source of calories,
right.
And a lot of lower-income people eat those foods, which aren't good for you.
Right.
What kind of health outcomes are you seeing as a result of poor nutrition?
Yeah, well, I'm glad you asked about that. There are four food desert areas in Santa Fe, and that is a designation by the USDA for a census tract that has a large amount, I think 30% of the population is low income, and they live more than a mile away from a grocery store where they can get fresh fruits and vegetables. Most of them are located, one is along kind of Alameda, west of St. Francis, kind of going down Agua Fria there. The other ones are all down by our Airport Road and south of there, South Cerritos, that kind of area. So in those food desert areas, a large amount of low-income people live who may have menial jobs that pay not very well, and they're working all day. They're, you know, trying to afford or get some kind of coverage for childcare. So they work an 8-hour or 10-hour shift, and then they go and pick up their kids. We have not very good public transportation in Santa Fe either, so that impacts. If you pick up your kids after a long day working, and they're hungry, and your choices are you have to go to the grocery store, get the food, cook the food, get it to the kids, which is going to take hours and a lot of money and transportation that you don't have. Or you can stop at the McDonald's and pay probably, you know, less than $10 to feed three kids, and everybody's happy. And the kids are crying out for it, too, because that's because of the marketing. So it's pretty compelling. It's pretty difficult to argue. So what we have to do really as a community is think of ways to make eating healthy just as convenient or more convenient even than eating the junk food. And we've got some initiatives at La Familia that are trying to do that. We have an initiative called Healthy Cena, which stands for Comunidad Ejercicio Nutrición y Acción, which when we see families that have overweight or obese kids, we can refer them to a nutritionist at La Familia. A community health worker comes out and does a home visit with them and helps them look at their neighborhood and their environment and think about how they can incorporate physical activity and healthy eating into their lifestyle. And then we also work with the Genoviva Chavez Center and different after-school programs and the MoGro mobile grocery store to get both access to physical activity at a reduced cost and access to fresh fruit, healthy fruits and vegetables at a reduced cost to those families as well. And so, you know, we're working also, there's a quality of life initiative going on in the South Side. Senator Heinrich's office and Councilman Carmichael Dominguez have been working on that. And so we're involved in that too, to really think about, well, how can we get more better infrastructure for physical activity, for walking, more of these small outlets to carry healthier options for people, all of that kind of stuff.
What are the actual diseases that you see that are a result of poor nutrition?
Well, you know, we see obesity, and there's a huge health disparity in obesity in Santa Fe, both low-income to wealthy and Hispanic versus white. Both of those, there's about double the rates of obesity amongst the low-income Hispanic group versus the white wealthy group. And obesity leads to high blood pressure, diabetes, and we see health disparities in all those measures between, you know, low-income folks, Hispanic population, and the wealthier white population.
We're talking to Dr. Wendy Johnson of La Familia Medical Clinic. There's certain ironies about this town in which we live, and one is that, I mean, we're very progressive. We pass a minimum wage. We have a clinic like La Familia. We also have tremendous inequality here.
Right. We are about more unequal. The county of Santa Fe is more unequal than about 95% of other counties in the country. So we rank pretty high on the inequality scale. We have a lot of wealth and we have a lot of poverty. And, you know, increasingly the middle class just in Santa Fe, just like other places, is disappearing. It's either the wealthy or the poor, and the jobs and the sort of economic opportunities here for people are really difficult. So it's really difficult, I think, for middle-income people to get by here and to do well. I think a lot end up leaving because it is hard. You know, we have new leadership in the city now. Maybe some of that will change. We were a leader in the minimum wage nationally for a while. Santa Fe had the highest minimum wage. I think that's not true anymore, but we're still up there.
But it's still not a wage that you can live on. And
it's not a wage that you can live on
by health insurance.
I think I heard recently that it's close to $14 to $15 an hour. There was an analysis of, you know, given the cost of living in Santa Fe and all of that, what is, what do you need? And if you look at the way our poverty rates are calculated too, you know, a lot of times the cost of living in a particular city and the rents and all of that aren't really factored in.
Well, they also calculate it on the basis of your car never breaks down.
Right.
And you never have any emergencies.
Right. And as we were talking about before, the public systems in Santa Fe are pretty weak. You know, we don't have a really robust public transportation system. You know, our schools are, you know, our school systems are struggling as well. And so it's difficult for poor people to or even middle income people to really get by here. If you feel like you have to send your kid to a private school, you know, you have to maintain cars because there's no public transportation. You have to pay high rent because we have pretty high rent here in Santa Fe. That's a pretty, you know, for a middle income, not even talking about poor folks. You know, that's a large chunk of your income right there. And we were talking about the health insurance too.
Yeah.
It's a pretty big chunk of your income right there, all those expenses.
So what we have is a national problem, and we're seeing the effects of it on a local scale. We're seeing the inequality here that we have all over the country. We're seeing the low wages and so on. So what, as a clinic, can you do? In other words, you're doing some of the programs you mentioned,
right,
like the SANA program.
Right. Well, another thing that I'll mention is that, you know, we have a big problem with drug addiction here in Santa Fe. We didn't talk about that, but I think that's also related to the inequality, the stress, all that kind of thing.
In two ways. One is that people self-medicate, and the other is that selling drugs is a lot more lucrative than working really low-wage jobs.
Right, absolutely. And I frankly see that in my patients. That and so we started a program for a Suboxone, which is buprenorphine is the generic name, for pregnant women, which is a new treatment, relatively new treatment for addiction, which is a lot harder to overdose and a lot safer in many ways than methadone, and can kind of satisfy the addiction without creating some of the bad side effects, getting people high. And especially for pregnant women, it's really good medicine because it allows them to satisfy their cravings, and it's not as dangerous in pregnancy. It's not dangerous in pregnancy like heroin, obviously, or even opioids taking
for the
them,
fetus.
For the fetus. And so babies that are born often have much shorter courses in the hospital of withdrawal or don't have withdrawal symptoms at all on the buprenorphine versus the heroin or methadone or opioids. So, you know, we're working on addressing those kinds of issues. But in general in Santa Fe, you know, we have a lot of behavioral health and drug addiction problems, and we're not addressing those very well. And, you know, maybe next time we can talk about that a little bit more during the whole show, because
yeah,
that would be a whole show, I think, to talk about that. But that's one of the things that we're doing. And I think the other big thing is we are taking care of people that nobody else wants to take care of. It's La Familia. And because of that, you know, we're not making money, because you don't make a lot of money. We're not making money off of those folks, obviously, because you don't make very much money off of people who can't pay for their medical care
and don't have insurance.
Right. So we're in kind of a difficult situation at La Familia, where we take care of that population. I mean, I don't want to say there's nobody else in town. There's a lot of other nonprofits, a lot of other behavioral health providers, especially, that do see that population. But in terms of offering full-service primary care to all comers, no matter what your situation is, if you're documented or undocumented, if you have insurance or you don't have insurance, you know, we're the only real game in town that does that on a large scale. We see about 14,000 patients, separate patients a year, that get their care at La Familia. So it's a huge kind of service we're providing. I mean, it's our mission at La Familia is to do that and provide as much access as we can. But it's difficult because we can't afford to pay our staff what we would like to pay our staff. And often, you know, people go and work in other healthcare providers in town because they can get paid more. So it's hard for us to, to keep up with the demand, because the demand is very great here.
Well, much more to talk about, and I look forward to having you on the show on a regular basis.
Great, thanks. Very much enjoyed being on the show.
Wendy Johnson is medical director of La Familia Medical Center. They are on the web at lafamiliasf.org. Thanks for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.